You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 4 October, I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Jimmy Moyoha, I want to touch on the Pick n Pay update and Motus expands further into the UK. Viv Govender from Rand Swiss says the UK government backpedals on the tax cut for the super rich. And then Keelan Puttier from 10X Investments on their South African Retirement Reality Report. It shows that most of us do not have a strong plan for retirement. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Oops, your car has no insurance. The FCA warns Constantia insurance policy holders that they actually are without insurance. Business Day, Investec jumps on share back announcement. Banking Group is following a capital optimization strategy given surplus capital in SA. Morning markets, just all green. The US, S&P up 2.6 and NASDAQ up 2.4%. In Asia, we've got Sydney up 2.6 and Tokyo up 2.4. Commodities, gold, $1,705 an ounce. Brent, $89.22 a barrel. Platinum, $905. Palladium, $2,254. Rand, stronger, $17.83. Bitcoin, $19,600. Tencent, down 1% in Hong Kong. And top 40 opening call to the upside, 460 points, that's about 0.8%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Jimmy Moyoha. Jimmy, appreciate, as always, the early morning. The Pick n Pay update, I mean, there were many parts to it. In the one sense, their like-for-like growth was kind of 7% off a low base, and that was kind of what inflation was, what they were experiencing. But the market, I suspect, really liked the growth in headline earnings, what, around maybe 90% sort of in the mid of the range, and certainly moved that stock much higher.
Morning, Simon. Yeah, no, obviously, I think with the Pick n Pay update as well, their general feedback was quite positive around their, performance, given that for them, this is technically an investment year. I mean, a lot of what they've been focusing on has been around, plans that are going to show, or plans that are going to add to revenues in future, things around, their Mr. D partnership and their listing on that. And so you're seeing that a lot of their earnings from a difficult year and from a difficult time where their competitors like Checkers have been rapidly opening new stores, rapidly expanding. ShopRite's been doing, I think I saw something about ShopRite did about 31 new stores in less than a month, averaging more than a store a day type of thing. So you're seeing that everybody in the space, in the retail space, is on an expansion drive, on an investment and a growth drive for future revenues. But I think that you're very right about that headline earnings and those earnings per share numbers looking very, very impressive and very attractive, all things considered.
Yeah, and I take your point on that. And I mean, opening a store a day, the mind just boggles. Motus recently spun out of Imperial a couple of years back, and they announced that they've been under caution. They're doing a deal in the UK, an aftermarket business. It's what, £182 million, about 3.6 billion ZAR, paying cash for it, and this is a continuation of their expansion abroad.
Yeah, so this makes sense for two reasons, right? Now, number one is the expansion, obviously the expansion side of it, in that it diversifies the income streams. Mm-hmm. But two, they're purchasing along the value chain. If you remember, a couple of months ago, you and I discussed Oceana, where Oceana purchased a prawn company and they purchased along their value chain. And you're seeing that almost emerge as a trend from companies that can afford to do it and companies that have strategic alignments to do so. Now, that benefits not only the current business and the current setup, it brings in new clients, but you're also then able to service your existing clients. So for Motus, you're now able to say, guys, okay, you can't, you can buy your vehicle from us, your second-hand vehicle, but you can also buy its parts from us down the line. Now, that's going to start in the UK, but I'm sure that'll be able to expand into their other regions and into South Africa and that sort of thing as well. So that's definitely going to, it definitely seems like a good strategic acquisition. But again, with companies like Motus and WeBuyCars, we know that the heaviest thing there is the fact that their business model lives on inventory. So it's they only really generate cash if they're able to move the vehicles, but they've got huge amounts of inventory on hand, and their assets are insane because they're just sitting all these cars waiting to be bought if they're not bought. But now this business allows them to bring in a different type of revenue that isn't asset-based, that isn't reliant on having a lot of assets on hand, because you can have your suppliers, they can come in and say, okay, cool, we'll supply you with the parts that you need on order and that sort of thing, or on consignment, and that's easier for cash flow as well. So it seems like a really good acquisition. I mean, the valuation, though, at that price, given that the assets, they're only buying about £30 million worth of assets, yes, effectively, and earnings before interest and tax was about £29 million as well for the last financial year. So, I mean, to pay 182, almost £190 million, I think they must see some value in that business, and they know they're going to be able to recover it. I mean, it does have 14,000 active clients. So I guess they're anticipating that they'll be able to recoup those funds.
Yeah, I take your point. I mean, it's a 6x EBIT margin price, which is a lot. But I like your point, buying that down along the value chain. I hadn't thought of that. That does make great sense. Jimmy Moyaha, independent analyst, appreciate the early morning time.
If seagulls were hardy-dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. The story around the UK and that mini budget of Friday before last is not going away. Viv, I want to get to the latest news, which is the walk back and the 45%. But a very high level, digging this weekend, I kept on coming across LDI, liability-driven investing, which has been put sort of at the center of what the problem was last week. From a high level perspective, what is LDI?
Well, LDI basically is a way that banks or something that has future liabilities, really pension funds, used to immunize themselves against, you know, big movements in interest rates and inflation and so on. And what happened here basically was it seems to be useful to immunize you against a small level, but when you get these massive moves we've been seeing, the imbalances created, and because you basically have kind of hedged yourself against these small moves, the bigger moves ironically, are more damaging to you. So what happened last week was we saw a bit of a spiral where these banks were forced to sell, these pension funds were forced to sell UK gilts, which is UK government bonds, and basically that caused UK government bonds to fall because people are selling, and which caused the banks to be forced, or the pension funds to be forced to sell even more. And they got into a debt spiral where effectively they had to sell because of regulations, and that just caused the price to fall, caused it to sell more. And the Bank of England had to step in and effectively be a buyer of last resort and, you know, kind of say to the market, you know, this won't fall below here, which caused the pension funds to basically, you know, halt the selling, which protected them, you know what I mean, from their own, like I said, ironically created hedges, which were supposed to immunize them against, you know, like I said, small to medium-sized moves in interest rates and inflation.
Yeah, and that was last week's story. The big story was the 30-year gilt sitting 5%, the pound almost at parity. As you said, Bank of England stepped in on Wednesday, restarted QE, which they had planned to actually do quantitative tightening effective this week. Now, Monday morning, just before the market opened, we basically had Liz Truss and her finance minister, Kwasi Kwarteng, walking back that top 45% cut, and, well, the 45% tax bracket. They were going to scrap it. I mean, this is just a mess. I mean, it's almost their nene moment, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, it's worse than that almost, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, nene was corruption. This is incompetence, from what I can gather. You know what I mean? I mean, it's cool. So, look, I mean, we should have known this because, like, if we go back and listen to Rishi Sunak, who Liz Truss went up against in the Tory party, debates here, he literally came out and said, your plans are fairy tale economics, and if you do this, this is what's going to happen. And everything short of an actual request for an IMF bailout has occurred, exactly as he said. And the IMF did come out and say, what you're doing is crazy, stop it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we are seeing, you know, to a certain extent, ideology-driven decisions being made. Liz Truss comes from the old-school supply, you know, side economics, you know, trickle-down kind of mm-hmm. stuff. And her thought process was, you know, give these rich people the chance to keep more of their money, get bigger bonuses with their bankers, and that will cause the economy to grow faster and will get us out of this particular mess we are in right now, which is obviously, you know, nice in theory, because there's no lose to that situation. It's all win-win. Basically, people pay less taxes and the government gets more money. Unfortunately, in the real world, there's always a trade-off.
There is. And what we have seen, and I mean, last week, Wednesday, as we said, when the Bank of England initially stepped in, that certainly helped. I mean, the 30-year had been over 5%. It moved to below 4%. Monday, we saw improvements in both the sterling dollar as well as the 30-year. But, I mean, certainly their credibility is shot. I mean, and I'm thinking both from a political but also from an economic. I mean, there must be traders in the City of London sort of can't wait for the next announcement from the exchange. So that they can take the opposite position.
Yeah, look, I mean, they're not the only one. I mean, you may not be seeing this as much because kind of handling behind the scenes, but Japan had a similar kind of mess up with their bond market a little while ago. Mm-hmm. And they're also in trouble in terms of just what they've gotten themselves into from an all-around kind of like, you know, pretzel twisted position because they can't raise rates because they have such a massive government debt. And there's something to be concerned about. I mean, if you look at it, you know how much debt there is in the world? Like the total number of amount of debt there is in the world. It's somewhere like about 300 trillion with a T.
Yeah, yeah.
So that means every single time you raise interest rates by 1% on average worldwide, you're causing $30 trillion worth of interest payments more in a year. And that's if you think about it that way.
And that money is just getting sucked out of the economy, and hence the worries around, can we do a soft landing? My sense is soft landing's off the table. It's going to be a question of how bad's the hard landing.
Exactly. Whether or not it's going to be a hard, sharp landing and a bit of rebound, or could cause longer-term, you know, let us say, great recession kind of issues, but maybe even use D instead of R, you know, depression kind of issues.
Yeah, yeah. We'll leave it there. Viv Govender at Rand Swiss, always appreciate the insights.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor, and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Now with Killian Portier, 10X Investments Product Development Specialist. Killian, appreciate the early morning time. Your South African Retirement Reality Report, this is for 2022, the fifth one, if my memory serves, that you've done. I think perhaps best summed up by the sort of executive summary and that you've put on the blog, on the website. Focus on surviving today crowds out future needs. People are struggling and retirement, truthfully, takes a back seat.
Good morning, Simon. Thanks for having me on your show. That's absolutely correct. The fifth edition of the 10X Investments Retirement Reality Report has highlighted just how dire the retirement readiness is in South Africa. You know, 46% of respondents have no retirement savings plan, and just 7% of respondents feel confident that they are on track to retire comfortably. But whilst many do focus on their immediate needs, which is, of course, understandable given the economic hardship, these decisions are largely outside of their control, and we believe that focusing on a few key factors that are in one's control can be the difference between the current dire situation and a well-prepared retirement.
And those factors in our control is simple things, if I would understand. It's around starting early. It's around the consistency of it, and then you know, putting it into a diverse, low-cost product and coming back in, if you're young enough, 40 years' time.
That is actually the case. So while 70% of respondents without a retirement savings plan say that they simply just aren't able to make ends meet, and this is really across all income brackets, what we find is even small tweaks to one's savings rate can make a large difference. So for someone who increases their savings from, say, 10% of income to 12%, would in effect be saving 20% more for retirement and therefore have 20% more money when they do reach that stage. And this was only for sacrificing 2% of take-up pay. It's consequential difference make a huge difference in the bigger picture.
Yeah, I take that. I hadn't thought of that, of course. Yeah, I mean, you add a little bit more to the savings, and it from a base effect, is quite giant. You made an interesting point there, which is something that I picked up in the report as well, is that income is not really a factor. I think a lot of folks would think, well, this lack of retirement planning is a low-income issue, but the data you show is that it's broadly the same across income groups, whether you're the low income and you do a household income of less than 20, or the high income, which is a household income of over 50,000 a year. No one's doing it regardless of their income levels.
It is true, and this is a common experience across all income brackets. And unfortunately, what we see is these numbers are climbing. Over the 70% of respondents without a retirement savings plan are simply not doing so because they can't make ends meet. And this is up from 64% last year and 56% from the year before.
Is that the trend that you've seen across the last 5 years? That you know, are we seeing any glimmers of hope? Certainly, I would imagine that 2022 with rising inflation and therefore interest rates is perhaps a harder the year than perhaps some of the others. Although there was a pandemic in the middle of it all, are you seeing any positive trends, or is it just a deterioration?
I think we have seen some glimmers of hope, you might call it. Mm-hmm. So what COVID was that. More South Africans had a better understanding of their retirement reality. Change the reality is a different situation. So, for example, the number of individuals who did actually have some sort of retirement plan actually increased, mm-hmm. and those who were on track to retire to try comfortably actually increased from 6% to 7%. So it's a modest improvement. But I think what we really try to highlight is that it's these small, modest improvements that can be magnified by the simple choices one can make, such as investing for growth. So, for example, only 20% of respondents invest for growth, mm-hmm. And the 45% actually save in cash or bank balances, which obviously runs the risk of earning returns that are lower than the rate of inflation, which over the long term ultimately destroys rather than builds wealth.
Yeah.
So we encourage individuals to seek out higher growth portfolios that match their long-term time horizon, which is ultimately what a retirement savings plan is.
And the other stock one, and this wasn't a surprise. In fact, I got an email, not to me personally, I'm on his newsletter, from Professor Scott Galloway out of the U.S. around women who markedly financially worse off with men, and it's the same in your report here. Pretty much against all measures, you make the point. Partly, it's gender disadvantage, which starts at birth. Particularly if careers are interrupted by pregnancy, raising of kids, but women are typically worse off than men in the retirement space.
Yes, we find that women in South Africa face a much starker retirement reality than that of men. And like you pointed out, there are several factors to it, from the starting amount of income that women earn relative to men, women exiting the workforce to take care of families. And also what we find is the people who are leaving work, there isn't enough preservation, and this is true for both men and women.
Mm.
60% of respondents who had the opportunity to access some of their retirement savings on leaving a job took it. And this is another example of a small change that can make a large difference. And simply preserving retirement savings, which might seem like a very small thing at the time and a decision that's perhaps taken lightly, but actually has substantial consequences down the line.
Yeah, it is that. If you do change jobs, don't take the money, stick it into preservation. Gillian Potier, 10X Investment Product Development Specialist, appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today on Twitter and LinkedIn, asking around how your retirement is doing. I mean, the data from that report is deeply sobering. And he makes some good points there, which, you know, just moving it from 10 to 12% of income saving, it's only a small amount of the money in your pocket every day, but it's a 20% increase which you will have in retirement. Have your vote, have your say at LinkedIn and Twitter. And our poll yesterday, we had been chatting with Roland Harby from Old Mutual Wealth about managing a living annuity during the market downturn, and we asked how your annuity, if you had one, was coping in this bear market. A third of you said you didn't have one. Almost half said struggling. I think that's probably the experience of the majority. 20% was saying it was doing enough. and then a small fraction of you said it was doing great. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m, podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.